Welcome to the Mr. Vincent Podcast, episode 107. I'm your host, Emmanuel Vincent, and a special edition, Saturday edition of the Mr. Vincent Podcast, as today, it is the day for wrestling fans, one of the biggest events of the year. Survivor Series is here in Boston, the first War Games at Survivor Series this year, and this podcast has got you covered. Now, this should have came out Friday at the latest, but you know, it's the holidays. I was out and about doing whatever, so didn't get a chance to edit and put this podcast up earlier. I wish I could have, but hey, better late than never, right? So me and the homie early in the week, Alan Burley, chopped it up, talked about a big week in wrestling, rather, with Full Gear, AEW's pay-per-view, and then Survivor Series, which is today. So we recapped Full Gear and previewed Survivor Series, and we talked about who would be the fifth member on Team Bianca for War Games, and I said, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Becky Lynch. It makes the most sense. And spoiler alert, for those who didn't watch SmackDown last night, it was, fact is, Becky Lynch, as she did, was announced as the fifth member on Team Bianca. So it should be a great pay-per-view tonight, and without further ado, let's get into this pod right now. Here it is. So, you know, my birthday was the 10th this month, and I saw, like, way in advance that there was AEW Dynamite was going to be in Boston on the 9th, so I told myself, you know what, I got to be there. This is too good to be true. I think it's a sign from God telling me, get these tickets, you got to be there, and I got to be as close as possible. And I took my man's advice, waited the last day, the day before, got four seats for $105. Probably like $130, $138 after taxes from the fees and everything. But hey, that is a great experience. You really appreciate it when you are that close.
Right.
Appreciate a live event. Because my first event was Ring of Honor Death Before the Sauna in the summertime. And I was like in the midsection. I was like, you know what? It's kind of cool live. I probably prefer being at home. The true experience is being on the floor, being pretty close to the action. Because it's just amazing. And you really get an appreciation for these wrestlers and what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, seeing it up close. Sometimes I feel like I really do it justice. Like, action that's going on in the ring. But when you're there at ringside, I don't know. Like, there have been times where, like, I high-fived Ronda Rousey.
Really?
I, like, hugged AJ Styles. Yeah, I was just like, when you're that close, you can just, like, reach out to them. And it's like, I think wrestling is very unique in that way because, like, there aren't really a lot of sports where the fans can interact with the athletes, you know?
Yeah, I would definitely say that the interaction with wrestlers is far exceeds, like, any professional league, whether like the NBA, NFL, MLB. Yeah, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's more of, like, I think a personal relationship, like, with a wrestler, because you like the individual wrestler or their faction, as opposed to like a sports team that changes players all the time. So,
yeah, I mean, like, the highlight of the night, I would say, for that episode of Dynamite was Guevara versus Danielson, best out of 2 out of 3 falls. That was a great match, classic.
Oh yeah, so yeah,
great match. Also, too, I like the 8-man tag match. Well, it was the Acclaimed and FTR versus Swerve and Keith Lee. And damn, who's the other team that was on? Who's on the team? Oh, and the Billy Gunn's kids.
The Ass Boys.
Yes, the Ass Boys. Yeah, I forget the name. Yeah, that was a great match. That was the opening, so it was crazy. So I'm sitting there like, oh, the Acclaimed and wrestle first, and the music came on. Yo, Acclaimed. I think the Acclaimed is really the biggest act in AEW right now.
Interesting.
I'm wrong.
I mean, they're very over.
Extremely
their
over.
Their merch is over. Like, I would say so. I mean, they're up there. I mean, I think.
I would say, other than them, I would say MJF and Jade Cargo. Yeah. I would say those, like, are the three biggest acts in AEW right now. Because when the Acclaimed song came on, crowd went crazy. Everybody's on their feet. And then because everyone wants to hear Max spin his freestyle. So that was dope, too, just being there in person, seeing that. Also, too, I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's kind of been about 2 weeks. So who else was fought? Samoa Joe was so predictable turning on Wardlow.
And that's why.
That's probably the guy that doesn't mean, no, no, Joe. I was like, yeah. That was crazy. I'm sure you know this. I was like, Rampage is recorded right after Dynamite, but they air it on Fridays.
Oh, I thought Rampage was live. I didn't know that it was recorded.
Yeah, so I was there for Rampage. So think about it. I got two shows in one for a great price. So Rampage is recorded right after. So I believe the first segment of Rampage was Christian and Luchasaurus in the ring. Then Jungle Boy comes down there and he ends up Luchasaurus ends up giving Jungle Boy a choke slam on the chair. So I remember that happening. Oh yeah, another great moment from Dynamite was when Saraya announced that she was medically cleared and she was able to face Britt Baker at Full Gear. So that was a great moment. The crowd was hyped for that, and seeing the reaction that she got live was dope too. And she cut an amazing promo that night. You know, just talking about her whole trials and tribulations, her setback from that neck injury, and what she had to go through. How people always doubted her whole life, and then that's how she's like back and ready to like you know to remind people just as who she is. So that was a really dope promo. Yeah. I was mad MJF wasn't there. I was really mad he wasn't there. But
that was there like an explanation for why MJF wasn't there? Or
I remember him cutting a promo that they showed us his promo in the beginning of the show, and then like halfway through the show, that's when Moxley came out with Regal and cut a promo too, an amazing promo too in response to that. So leading up to obviously the Full Gear.
Right. I did see the Moxley Regal promo. I thought it was pretty cool how Moxley referenced his battles with William Regal, like in the past, like talking about the FCW days and how deep that history is. And I think like given what happened at Full Gear, like that story is going to even develop more between Moxley and Regal and now MJF.
For sure. Yeah, so actually, you know what? Let's get to it right now because this is a big week in wrestling. We're first off of Full Gear AEW. This Saturday is Survivor Series. So I want to start off with Full Gear recap. Overall, what was your thought about the pay-per-view?
Overall, I thought it was good. I watched most of it. I thought that Saraya versus Britt was pretty good. It was cool to see Saraya back in the ring, and it was a little rusty, but you can tell that like she still has it. For the six-man tag, for the Trios Championship, Death Triangle versus the Elite.
Classic.
I was very, very surprised that the Elite ended up losing that match. Given that they had been gone for months, they've been hyped. The Elite are... it was just very surprising because in my mind, I'm like, okay, they... the belts, like they're just gonna win them back, and no, like Death Triangle won. So,
well, yeah. See, to me, it's like, is it right to put the titles on them so quick? I don't know. As opposed to having a build up and setting the stage up where the stakes are so high that they win it in that moment. But I'm pretty sure you heard the news, right? After that match, what's gonna go down?
The best of seven series.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's interesting, like, doing that. I don't think I ever heard that before in wrestling.
I've never heard it for trios, but...
I think I heard a best of five before in WCW.
Yeah, I think Booker T and Chris Benoit did a best of seven.
I thought it was five. I was referring to that, but I didn't want to, you know, bring up...
Oh. Booker T and an unnamed former wrestler.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking of. Like, I think that's the only thing I can reference that was similar to this best of seven that we're going to get from the Death Triangle and the Elite.
Yeah, I mean, my hope is that, like, you know, like seven matches, especially at the level that like all six of these guys perform, like, you know, I think there is liability for possible injury to happen if they actually go to the seventh match. Like, that is a lot. And I think that might be a lot of like TV time to devote. But I do agree with you that the storyline is probably going to play out that the Elite win the titles back, maybe like in the seventh match.
I felt like it only makes sense to go seven. You feel me?
Right.
Yeah, because we want to see the best going back and forth, and then stakes as highest. And you know, like in sports, ultimately, the best two phrases in sports, game seven. People love that, right? So you can incorporate that into wrestling and probably have it on the greatest stage of all. They actually had the dates and the locations for where all matches will take place, assuming it can get to a game seven. So I want to take a look at that, where it's going to be, and if it will be I would assume it'll be a pay-per-view, because I think that's the only way to end it, at a pay-per-view. You can't get that seventh match away for free on Dynamite.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. It'll probably end up on, I don't know, like if All Out or All In is in the springtime, like AEW usually has like two or three huge shows. Mm-hmm. So maybe like All Out. But it's also kind of interesting how the Elite have come back, but there haven't been any references on AEW TV about where they've been and why they lost the titles in the first place. And, you know, like I get that, like, 99% of the people who are watching AEW are probably very internet wrestling savvy, and they probably know everything about, you know, the brawl after All Out. But at the same time, like, for a casual viewing audience, it's a little strange to just, you have these wrestlers, they're there 1 week and then they leave for a couple months and then they come back. So I think a lot of times AEW is very reliant on the idea that their fans have like a deep knowledge of wrestling, or their fans are very are very diligent in finding out stories backstage and reading dirt sheets and stuff. So I don't know. I just found out that was a curious piece of booking right there.
Well, I think we can blame social media for this and the advancement of the internet. Because they definitely wouldn't go that route if that was the case. And maybe, I don't know, maybe Tony Khan just doesn't want to further address the issue and, you know, kind of like sell the brand and have the critics coming at him. Because I feel like Tony Khan gets a lot of heat coming his way. Not heat necessarily, but I would say that he might be slightly over-critiqued a lot on the internet, I just feel like. Because I see so much, like, negative things about AEW and everything. And in my mind, was like, yo, like, they're not even, they just hit their 3-year anniversary back in October, I believe. Like, this is a brand, for them to have established this fan base this early on and have to be on have a national broadcast, and like diehard fans, is, I think that's crazy. I think that's a huge achievement in itself. I could be wrong, but
I mean, it is a huge achievement. It is a huge achievement, especially since WWE has been the dominating
on the industry.
Yeah, for at least 20 years, a little bit more than that. So, for AEW to come in and be as good as they have been for the last 3 years, like, that is a testament to Tony Khan. And like the belts, like, mean something in AEW. Like, there's value in being AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. Even though like it has like a comparatively like very short lineage compared to WWE. But
yeah,
I do agree with you. I think Tony Khan has like a lot of haters online. And I guess people have to understand that he is booking the shows by himself.
Yeah.
It's his choice to do that, but he's booking it by himself. And for the most part, like, it's good quality, you know? Like, he delivers more than not when it comes to booking.
I think so.
So, what are your thoughts about, like, CM Punk and what his future is going to be?
I think he's done with AEW. Maybe a slight chance he can end up back at WWE one day. But yeah, I think his future is done at AEW. But based on everything I've seen online so far, and see how much the people are saying that he's always been problematic since dating back to the time in WWE, and it just transferred over to AEW. Yeah, I think he's done. I love him as a competitor. I want to see him out there, but I don't think it's going to happen, at least under AEW.
Yeah, I think he burned way too many bridges in AEW to go back there. And I think also AEW has sort of shown that they can survive without Punk. Mm-hmm. And that they don't necessarily need him to be a top draw for their company. It's like they have a lot of stars that are waiting and like capable for the opportunity, you know, like MJF.
Yeah.
Like Darby, Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy, Britt Baker, like Powerhouse Hobbs, Wardlow. It's like they have so many young talent that can be there for like the next 5, 10, 15 years. And I think Punk made a lot of sense at the time.
Yeah, because when did he come back? Like about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's been, I think his W was like exactly a year from like when he debuted to like his last day in the company.
Oh yeah, so like you said, it made perfect sense because it has this young up-and-coming company that needed an attraction. And who better to get than somebody that a lot of people in the wrestling world, just about everybody in the wrestling community is familiar with, a beloved superstar coming onto your brand. I mean, we see the ovation he got when, I believe, he debuted in his hometown of Chicago.
Yeah.
I believe the debut was there. And we see how the crowd went crazy. I remember that the meme of the guy just crying. Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, that guy got clowned. He's still getting clowned. He's still getting clowned.
I use that meme so much online. It's so perfect for a lot of situations. But yeah, like, so yeah, I think that it was more of, you know, well, it's somebody who, he's probably past his prime in terms of the end ring ability, but he can still cut one hell of a promo, still got a lot of clout in it. So it's going to be a big attraction. It was going to bring more eyeballs onto your product. But now it just seems like, hey, he's been more of a headache than we realized he would be, so we gotta cut ties. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Tony wanted Punk to be there as long mm-hmm. as possible, but there's also pressure from the locker room because the Elite are, yes, they're the executive vice presidents, but they're also like well beloved in the AEW locker room, and I think mm-hmm. a lot of AEW wrestlers like look at them as a reason why AEW exists in the first place. I think Punk is just like permanently blackballed from AEW, but I do think WWE, that's an interesting conversation to be had of like whether or not he goes there.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think, like I said, I mentioned, slight chance that can happen. And I mean, we've seen Cody Rhodes go back there.
Right.
And so why can't it CM Punk do the same? You brought up about the AEW has like a lot of like up-and-coming stars who were like in their prime in terms of their wrestling career. Maybe not even it. A lot of them probably not even in their prime yet. You brought up MJF. That was the perfect move, I felt like, to have him beat Moxley in that spot and right. walk out a champion, because to me it symbolizes it's a new era in AEW. What happened in the past, days in the past, we're going to move forward with MJF. And did you see that promo he cut at the press conference right after?
It was excellent. Yeah.
Oh my God! Like, yo, this guy is amazing on the mic, and just I believe he's only 26 years old too. How the hell is he that good? Like,
I mean, he's like a prodigy, you know. Like, even this past year, he's just gotten a lot better with his character, like more refined. He stood toe to toe with Punk on the mic earlier this year, and that was excellent. I mean, that was a 20-minute segment of them just being on the mic, and I think MJF has always been the logical choice to lead AEW as the world champion, and I'm glad they pulled the trigger when they did, because he's really hot right now. Like, he's you know, he's the guy to build the company around. Yeah,
I agree, and it's funny. It seems like the crowd's cheering for him, like he's a face, but it's kind of like AEW's like struggling with, can we turn him full face or should we keep him heel? I think he should be a heel. I like him as a heel. I don't want them to tamper with that one bit right now. Don't do it, AEW. You're listening, Tony Khan. Don't do it.
Yeah, I think he's most effective as a heel. But I think he's also one of those heels that, like, the fans, they love no matter what.
Kind of like, I would compare it to, like, Stone Cold. Like, Stone Cold 97, 98.
Yep. Sort of that tweener position as well. Like, yeah, I think, like, anything that MJF does that is remotely babyface is just counter to that character.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's good that he's a heel, but now it's like, who is going to be, I have a guess of who's going to be number one contender, but it'll be interesting to see who they pair up with MJF.
Well, let me know what that is, because honestly, like, I haven't been, ever since basketball and football season has been underway, I haven't been keeping up with wrestling as I want to. So I'm kind of like intrigued with hearing who you think will be the number one contender, or who you think should be the number one contender.
Okay, so based on what happened at Full Gear with the triple threat match between Joe, Powerhouse, and Wardlow, I think the belt was taken off Wardlow so he can be the one to challenge MJF. And if you notice in that triple threat match, like, it was Powerhouse Hobbs that took the pinfall. So I think down the line it is going to be Wardlow versus MJF. They have that long history there of Wardlow being his MJF's bodyguard for, like, the first couple of years of AEW. So I think that's the direction that they're going to go to. And I hope so. I hope it's not Moxley again.
What do you have against Moxley in the championship picture? That's funny. I mean,
he's, to me, it's like it's tiring, you know? Like, he's already been champion like 3 times. His matches are good. But I haven't really liked anything he did since he left WWE. And sometimes I'm like, is this the same person? like, I don't know. Moxley, he's a good worker. It's just, I don't have, like, the desire to sit and watch his matches. Like, no matter who he's up against. I think, like, I think AEW has fresher alternatives to Moxley, and also, I don't know, it kind of if it's Moxley again, that's a long time for one guy to stay in the title picture, right?
Okay, so you're saying that it's more so the fact that he's already had his, like, time in the spotlight, let's get somebody else who's fresh and who can have a chance to, you know, shine within the company.
Yeah, okay. I mean, for me, there's a fatigue with, like, Moxley being always in the title picture. And I think AEW made the right decision to make MJF the champion. Mm-hmm. But I also think that he needs a opponent that's also going to be up and coming so they can build. Because Moxley's all set. Like, he's already established enough. Like, he doesn't need a belt. Just like Jericho doesn't need a world belt. Like, he has a Ring of Honor belt, but...
Man, Jericho being the Ring of Honor champion is a true definition of stat padding. What does he need that for? At this point of his career, like, what does that do? Nothing. But, I see what you're coming from with Moxley in that case. Is he the best in the ring? Is he an eye-popping talent? Not really. Good, but good. Solid worker, like you said. And he has been in picture for a while now for the title, so. They got a lot of young bloods in there that can get another shot too.
Right. So, I mean, if it does end up being Moxley, that's fine. I guess it ties into William Regal like screwing him over in favor of MJF. It's just for me, I'm tired of Moxley in that picture. It's like, bring somebody else in.
That's funny. Yeah. So I agree. Now, that's my thing with AEW, I want to say. I mentioned earlier that I love their wrestling, like A1 matches from a wrestling standpoint, but I never really felt like they tell the best stories, or at least so far early on in the company's existence. But I love the story that, and then we've seen it, I think, come to an end on Full Gear, the first match, Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus in the
game. Yeah, yeah.
That's a great story right there, and that was a fantastic match. Talk about a banger for the opening match of the night.
It was an extremely brutal match. Oh my gosh!
Yeah, like it's so graphic too. All that blood.
Yeah.
WWE does that, will never do that, and I think that plays into the different audiences that both companies have.
Right. I think AEW fans are more open to bloodshed, sort of like the deathmatch hardcore wrestling. Yeah. And WWE, like they're like a publicly traded company. They're PG. So like blood is something that I think Hunter did a interview recently. He was asked about whether or not blood will make a return in WWE programming. He basically said, you know, we're past that. We're past that era.
I saw that headline in the tweet, but I didn't read the article. But yeah, I remember seeing that.
I think in the Jungle Boy Luchasaurus match, it totally made sense, like given the history between them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jungle Boy came out looking even more like a star. I was surprised that they had him beat Luchasaurus, like, kind of clean, especially
since
he was taken.
Exactly, he was taken one hell of a beating. And then ended with that elbow dive from the top of the cage. It was just like amazing, an amazing image and through the table. I was gonna say I thought that he would use a weapon of some sort to defeat him. Maybe one can look at the table being a weapon, so to speak. In that situation, give him the elbow through the table. So it wasn't really like clean, like he like pinned him clean or made a submit clean.
Right, he had some type of assistance in beating Luchasaurus, which makes sense to me. Like, you look at the size discrepancy between the two. It's like,
like having to beat him like straight clean would be a dumb image to put out there.
Yeah,
but I like the fact that. Like their styles, I felt, were in contrast, worked well together from the sense that at least Luchasaurus is a big who's an athletic big who can move around well against a small, young, athletic younger boy. So it looked like it made sense from a visual standpoint.
Right. And then also, like, with Christian being included in the storyline, like, I think his promo work has been incredible, like the heel heat that he's able to draw. And I think, to me, it seems like Luchasaurus was a stepping stone, and they're gonna go back to Christian and Jungle Boy at some point, like when Christian's arm is healed.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that thing going back to that storyline, focusing on them. What do you think was the worst match of the night?
Oh, man. I'd have to look at the card, but...
I'm looking at it right now, so I would say, me personally, I'll go with Jade and Nyla.
Yeah, that was bad too. I mean, to be honest, that whole storyline I've been thinking was really bad.
That storyline was kind of like
I stole your belt. Oh, you're the champion, but I have your belt. Like, it was just such a
I'm dropping the ball with that. That's like a Vince McMahon like angle to take,
right?
Approach to go. Like, I don't like that at all. Like, that's I felt like AEW was beneath doing something like that for a storyline. Stupid. And then seeing Cargo go on promo tours with the belt, man, you know, like, what the hell? Why have the belt with you for it was stolen? Like, see, come on, like this is why the internet has ruined wrestling. Well, not ruined wrestling, but it's kind of like kayfabe is dead due to the internet because she was on the Breakfast Club Friday with the belt. So I was like, come on.
Well, just even like in a real life sense, it's like if you work for a wrestling company and your coworker steals your belt. Then they're probably going to give you another one, right? Or like get HR involved. But like, that's happened so many times. It's just so silly. Like, and also, like, it's like, okay, let's say if Nyla Rose won that match, then how anticlimactic would that be? Because she's been carrying the TBS title for like a month.
Yeah.
So it's like, but yeah, it's like I think Jade is like very valuable to AEW.
Oh, like she's extremely valuable. I think she's the top five most important act in the company right now. Because, well, you know what? I think I said earlier in an early episode with you that I think like she's like not really good in the ring. Right. But I was watching some things from her, like her on a podcast and like Complex doing a behind the series. About a behind the episode feature of her getting ready for a Dynamite show. And I have to take it into consideration. She is like, what? So 2 years into wrestling, something that she never really planned for. It just essentially fell in her lap. She fell into it. So she's learning a lot on the fly, being mentored by Justin Reynolds and Daniel Bryan. So I should take back my criticism of her. And she is working on the fly. So in that case, she's doing a good job. But what she is doing is, she is great on the mic. She's beautiful. Great physique. She attracts eyeballs to the company. Maybe people who don't even like wrestling.
Yeah.
Would watch it just to see Jade Cargo.
Yeah. Yeah, and like another thing about Jade is like, she sounds believable.
Oh my god, she's great. She is A1 on the mic.
And also, she's like with the baddies, like her group, like that's been a pretty cool act to see, like them evolve. And also, it seems like, you know, when she does, if she does eventually lose that TBS championship, like it's gonna be a big deal. It's gonna be a huge deal.
It's gonna propel that whoever beats her to another level and probably take them higher, maybe eventually. So I was always wondering too, why the hell if she's like this dominant, this much of a badass, why don't they put the championship belt on her? But because it's kind of like confusing. But at the same time, now that I realize like she's like really new to the company, it's probably in the best interest not to make that move just yet. Let her get more reps under her belt, you know, until she's ready to like go and face like being in the championship contention.
That's a very good point. As like. It's kind of a weird situation because she is probably more over than the new champion Jamie Hayter, and Jade is definitely more over than Toni Storm.
Yeah,
you kind of have a situation where you have, someone who could be or should be world champion like holding a secondary title. So it is kind of an odd situation they find themselves in.
And people do compare her a lot on the internet, more so because they went on a crazy undefeated, crazy undefeated streaks with Goldberg. World champion, he was a U.S. champion. Right. And I believe he was a dual champion. Yeah, when he beat Hogan on that Nitro episode, he ended up holding both titles. So.
Okay, so another thing I'm thinking about, too, is, like, so when Jade moves on from the TBS championship and the world title, like, is there someone who they can pair up with that'll, like, because what made Goldberg's first championship work was the fact that he won it from Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hogan.
Arguably the greatest of all time, that many estimations.
Yeah, you know, and it was the, you know, in the Georgia Dome, like it was a huge deal. So like,
I think that was the last time too that Nitro won the Monday Night War. I think it was the last time they won the Night War. But at the same time, they probably fucked themselves over because they could have made a lot of money in pay-per-view. But everybody was just focused so much on the battle on Monday night that they lost all their money.
Right. So they gave away that pay-per-view match on free TV. So, well, I mean, that's why the later years for WCW are just... It was like everything you can do wrong to destroy a wrestling promotion. But
pretty much.
You know. But I guess my point is, like, I don't think Jade has that counterpart unless maybe Britt Baker, maybe Saraya. Let's see how.
I'm thinking Saraya. Saraya is somebody that Jade would benefit from pinning for the world title, I feel like.
I agree, yeah. Do you want to get into Survivor Series?
We talked enough about AEW. Let's talk about this Sunday in Boston, Massachusetts at the TD Garden Survivor Series War Games. You know what? It's been so long since talking about wrestling with you. I don't think I ever got to get your take on the Triple H regime so far, and the changes that he made to the company.
I mean, it feels like an entirely different show right now. Like, you can tell that there's more thought put into storylines. The booking, even things like that White Rabbit campaign that they did for Bray Wyatt coming back, like that was very it was very creative. It was something that got the fans really engaged, and it like adds depth to the shows. And I mean, I think Triple H has been doing an excellent job. Like, I think he's bringing back the right people and putting them in positions to succeed.
Yeah.
As opposed to when Vince was in charge, he didn't see anything in Bray Wyatt. So.
And a damn shame that he didn't either. I was so mad when they released him. Like, what the hell are they doing?
It's shocking, you know. But I think, like, Triple H has been doing a good job. For me, the qualities of the show have improved. He has been giving a lot of time to, like, mid-card acts.
Yes.
So it's just, like, Raw is really tough to watch because it's, like, oh, like Riddle versus Chad Gable. Like, you know, like they're both great, but like, I don't want to watch like 10 or 15 minutes of that. I think that he's doing a really good job. He's not throwing everything away from the Vince regime. Like, the bloodline is still very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's keeping the I think the positive things intact, but then he's also shaping it into his vision, and the product just seems to have more of like a linear presentation now. So I mean, I'm really, really excited about the way that this has been. And for me, it kind of becomes like Raw and SmackDown. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna check it out every week because I want to see what direction that Triple H is going.
Yeah, I mean, you actually hit the nail on the head right there with basically everything you said. So like again, what I mentioned earlier is that like what I appreciate about AEW is that they always put on like A1 matches on their regular broadcast, Dynamite and Rampage. And I always felt like with WWE that wasn't the case. But ever since Triple H is taken over, I feel like he's made an emphasis to give the audience and those watching at home great matches on TV, as opposed to just keeping them for their pay-per-views. So I like that. And the fact that he's actually like made titles significant again, like the Intercontinental Championship, the US title. We're seeing these titles being like in competition on pay-per-views now. And we've seen these matches be like great on Raw and SmackDown. So I appreciate that as well too. And I'm so happy that he actually got rid of the 24/7 title. Honestly, like, listen, I know that the 3-hour show is extremely hard to like to manage and keep up with week after week after week. But that was one of the most pointless gimmicks I've ever seen. Like, really, like the hardcore title thing was cool back in the day when they did that against like, Defender 24/7. And but that was going on way too long. I felt like with the 24/7 title. Even the fact that they even had like Becky Lynch compete and involved in that. Granted, I it was part of the storyline because like she had hit rock bottom after losing the belt at Mania to Belair and everything. But I'm like, nah, you can't put Becky in Lynch. I don't care. She will never hit rock bottom like that.
Yeah.
To be involved for that title. And then seeing this Nikki Cross disregard that belt and put it in the trash the other day.
Oh, she tried to put it in the trash.
She tried to, but I thought she did.
No, like there's like she missed the trash can, so she tried to throw it in and just like careened off the rim of the trash can.
Well, I'm gonna assume that she actually meant to put it in the trash.
Yeah,
but it didn't go in. But the fact that she like had that shows like so much disdain for that belt. Like, some of these days, I got bigger fish to fry. I got other titles I can go after.
So, I mean, it's a hideous belt. It was so ugly. You know, ugly. Like. It was just, I get it. I think around the pandemic era, I think that's when the 24/7 belt started. And there are some highlights from the entire lineage, the history of it. Like R-Truth had a lot of fun moments, and Reginald, who I don't even think is on WWE TV anymore. But it was just, I'm glad it's gone. I think like, having a silly comedy title in any wrestling promotion, it's like doesn't work.
Yeah, like it just felt like so like new generation era, like with like Doink the Clown and all these other like professions of wrestling gimmicks. Is we don't need this belt, man. Let's just move on. And I'm so happy that transpired. Let me ask you this question. No, so. I forget the guy's name who interviewed Triple H that I sent you before a while back. The BT Sport guy, Ariel Helwani. Now I remember I saw him on the Bill Simmons podcast about a month ago, and they were talking about AEW and WWE, and he brought up how he's just so like brought up like the fact that the Triple H's regime has been off to a great start so far, and he was really excited about Survivor Series this year. With War Games being included, because he felt like that was like one of the four prestigious pay-per-views that the WWE had, but it got really, really stale over the years, especially with like the traditional 5-on-5 matches, right. And like even how last year they had the main event was Reigns versus Big E, but the title's not involved. What was the point of fighting? Just have a title be involved, but they didn't go that route. So he's like, he's really excited that this has been like revamped, and it feels like it's been like what's the word I'm looking for, like reignited. So, what's your thoughts on that? Do you share the same sentiment as him?
I do. I mean, I think, like, for Survivor Series to be effective, like, the team matches need to be storyline rooted and not just like, oh, I'm from SmackDown, you're from Raw, let's fight. And for both the men's and women's matches, like, I think WWE has done a really good job, like, logically coming to this conclusion of War Games. Like, Roman and the Bloodline have been feuding with the Brawling Brutes for months. And I don't know, I'm not like a huge fan of the Brawling Brutes, but I feel like they're going to have like a hell of a performance at Survivor Series, you know. Particularly like Pete Dunne, like, he's really, really good. And then with like Drew involved, him and Roman have had beef like since Clash of the Castle. Drew has beef with Sokoa, like, so, and then Kevin Owens coming in, so that match makes sense. Everyone involved, it's like there's a logical point to it, and they've done a really good job, like, building heat against the Bloodline, but then also like, this is also good too for Roman because he's being protected even longer, and it's not like he has to defend the belt on a pay-per-view. And it's like right now there really aren't any contenders, so it totally makes sense to have the world champion be involved in a War Games as opposed to like what you were saying last year, doing like a champion versus champion type of deal where nobody really benefits. And then on the women's side, that the way that storyline has been building up, that also makes sense too, where you have I mean, Bayley and Bianca seem like they've been feuding for like a really long time.
You could even say it even dates back to last year's Hell in a Cell.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I mean, that is like a really deep rivalry. And then with Nikki Cross, which I'm really glad that another great thing that Triple H did was revert Nikki Cross back to her original character.
Oh yeah, I was gonna bring that. I don't know why I didn't bring that up. Yes. Again, that gimmick was very new generation era, with the superhero gimmick. It was just annoying. Like, what the hell is this? Get out of here.
Well, it was embarrassing. I mean, apparently it was her idea. I don't really believe.
Yeah.
Like that everything was her idea. I don't think the gear was her idea, but no, it was really horrible, and it could have killed her career. So, I mean, that's another thing I like that Triple H is doing. It's like, okay, he had a lot of this talent when he was in NXT, when he was running NXT. So, like, it's like now he's able to enact the vision that he had for his guys and girls in NXT for the main roster. And, undoing a lot of Vince's mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, he's on the fly too. Basically, I do a pretty damn good job. I mean, hey, ain't nobody perfect, so there's things we can critique him for. But I think overall, he's doing one hell of a job. I wonder who the fifth member is going to be for Team Bianca. So before me and him got announced as a member, I was like, all right, two spots. I'm thinking Naomi and Sasha Banks. They're about to come back at Survivor Series, but now with me and him being there, I'm like, Sasha Banks probably is going to come back. So I know they said they're gonna announce it on SmackDown who the final member is.
Oh, cool.
Is it gonna be? I thought possibly because I heard that Braun Breaker and Nikita Lyons soon. And I remember seeing Nikita Lyons at a pay per view. I forgot which one it was. She was like front row. Could it be Nikita Lyons taking that fifth spot? But I don't know that will. That's not gonna bring a pop like that. Like her coming back.
No, it's not.
I don't think Becky Lynch will be ready either, because I felt like the timetable would be for her to come around the Rumble.
If it is Becky, that would make absolute sense, just because it was damage control that took her out of action. No, I hadn't considered Becky, but I think if Nikita Lyons, like, she's not ready.
You don't think she's ready?
No.
Okay.
No. She has like a good look. She has a good presentation. She's like very unique, but she's not ready for that kind of spot. And also, like you said, like it'll be like a very lukewarm response if she came out, because yeah. she's not like, I don't even know, but she has like potential for like the future, and I think she is like poised to be women's champion in NXT, maybe be the one to be and dethrone Mandy Rose, but I feel like she's so green right now, like it'd be a bad choice. But
okay so that leaves, so maybe there's a possibility it could be Becky Lynch. It could be Belair, because I feel like she'll come back with Naomi, so probably wouldn't be I said Belair, wouldn't be Sasha Banks.
Yeah.
Because I feel like she will return with Naomi, because they will probably, I would think, come back at the same time. So what if it was Charlotte? Charlotte Flair would even met. I don't think Charlotte would make sense. I think the only logical person right now is Becky Lynch.
I would say so too. That, like, storyline wise, I think the crowd, I think Charlotte would get a significant pop from the crowd, just because
she got a pop.
Yeah, it would be because she's been gone for like a long time. But then again, it's like, does that make sense for her to be on the face team? Like,
oh yeah.
So I don't know. They switch her back and forth all the time. So maybe she would like turn on Bianca the next week on Raw or something. But yeah, I think Charlotte would be another good option too.
But not as good as Becky Lynch.
Not as good as
Becky Lynch. Because we talked about, you know, Damage Control took her out off, just coming off a great match against Belair, and a great ending to one of the best, I think, rivalries I've seen in the last 15, 20 years in wrestling. So she like made that face turn in that moment.
Right.
So it only makes sense to have her, you know, hold down Team Bianca in War Games.
Yeah, I just want. I wonder what her health status is like. Because, yeah, now that you say that, I'm like now convinced that that's the direction they're gonna go to. Is
Becky Lynch, right?
Yeah,
big time Beck. Yeah. So hopefully we're right, and it happens. So other matches that are you looking forward to? You're probably not looking forward to Shotzi versus Ronda for the SmackDown Women's Title.
No, and I feel like, I mean, I haven't really seen a lot of like promo for this match, and
I feel like it was just announced last week. Am I wrong? I think it was announced like last week.
Yeah, like last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. I don't know. I think Shotzi's good. Like, she's a really good babyface. I think she's like similar to like what Bayley was, like her first gimmick, like a role model for young girls.
Yeah.
I guess like somewhere like Liv Morgan, which I don't know what the hell happened to Liv Morgan, but like she's gonna lose this match.
I agree.
And maybe she'll put up a fight, but I think for me, like, there's no intrigue there, because it just seems like Ronda is gonna win. But then it also just seems like Ronda is just, she's going through the motions. It's like she's there and she's champion, but it doesn't feel like an impactful title run. It just seems like she has the belt and she's kind of just taking on the smattering of contenders left. I mean, I would have rather have seen Raquel Rodriguez in that spot. She's pretty good in the ring. She has a unique look. you know, if WWE did decide to go with her as champion, I think that would be like a way for them to tap more into the Latino market. Mm-hmm. So that would be my choice. She's not great in the ring, but neither is Ronda. I just think this Survivor Series has 5 matches on the card so far. And one of them is Ronda versus Shotzi. And that seems like a very strange match to be putting on this, you know, one of the big 4 pay-per-views.
Yeah, it definitely feels like it's like the filler of the night.
Yeah.
If it would be that match. I'm not really hyped about that match either. Honestly, like, I watch more Raw right now than I do SmackDown because of other things. So I'm not really at home like when SmackDown comes on. So I haven't really followed with SmackDown in depth for a while now, but I still like follow more Raw. So I'm not like familiar with that storyline, but yeah, looking at it, I'm like, I think I can do without this match on the card, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the bathroom break, unfortunately. You
know. Yeah, or the concession stand break if we go there.
Yeah. I just...
I definitely need another beer.
Go to the concession stand. I don't have high hopes.
They announced it yesterday, the U.S. titles in the triple threat match.
Yeah.
Seth freaking Rollins got to go up and get Austin Theory and Bobby Lashley. So I'm confused. Okay. I didn't know that. I thought the Money in the Bank was only for a championship match, heavyweight championship match, not the U.S. title. Right, that he went for trying to cash it on the U.S. title and ended up losing?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Well, like,
okay.
I think it's always been understood that the Money in the Bank contract guarantees a match with either like the World Heavyweight Champion or WWE Champion or whatever, Universal Champion. So, yeah, it didn't really make any sense for Theory to cash in on the U.S. Champion because he cut a promo, I think, last week, like explaining his rationale. Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
He was like, he said that, well, you know, the way Roman right now, he's untouchable with the bloodline, and there really is no way to beat him without having to deal with them. So he was like, you know, I decided to cash in on you know, one of the best U.S. champions of all time. So, with Seth Rollins. And so they tried to explain it away, but it really didn't make any sense, especially since, like, he had, like, maybe, like, 7 or 6 months to hold on to the Money in the Bank. Like, I don't know. I think what people are saying on the internet is just Triple H wanted to sort of, break down the Austin Theory character that was building up, like, you know, like him being Vince's handpicked, what would the word be? Like Vince's handpicked guy. So
yep.
Part of that was just getting rid of the Money in the Bank briefcase. So he didn't have to do that. Like it's like, not taking like another cowardly heel route. It's like, okay, let's see what Austin Theory can do on his own without any kind of support. And even the way that he won that, the Money in the Bank, was like he cheated basically. So I think they're building him up. But I also think Seth is gonna retain. Seth has been on fire. He is over again with the fans.
Yeah. And
he has a way of like really drawing in and endearing fans like with his ring work. So, and which has been pretty good over the last couple of months. Like, so I think he's going to retain and, And then with Lashley, I don't know where they go from Lashley. With Lashley, my hope is that they will reunite the Hurt Business.
Oh yeah, I love that fact. That was a good faction.
That was like one of my favorite factions like in a really long time.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, hopefully they go that route. So I wanted to touch on the things that you mentioned. So I think that Triple H was like that's a good example of Triple H really just working on the fly and trying to like undo what Vince was doing in terms of the Austin Theory momentum that was building up. And I think it was more so breaking down Austin Theory's character.
You didn't think that it was a breakdown of Theory's character?
Yes, I didn't think that by Triple H electing to have Theory compete for use his Money in the Bank to cash it on the U.S. title, that was necessarily a breakdown of Theory's character, but more so diminish the Money in the Bank gimmick, which a lot of people thought was stale and dry at this point. And so, like, that kind of worked as fast as they could to, you know, get that out the picture.
I don't know. I thought he was a pretty good Money in the Bank.
But the whole thing of having like people come down with a green briefcase, trying to cash in, and
right.
in certain spots, they kind of seem. So maybe who knows.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I don't know. Do you think they should continue to have Money in the Bank in the future?
That's a good question, because didn't I send you an article about that before? Possibly getting rid of the pay-per-view? I can't remember. I'd be seeing some of those articles I send you.
from what I heard is like they're thinking of moving it back to WrestleMania where it originally was.
And get rid of the actual pay-per-view, Money in the Bank.
Right.
Yes. Okay. That wouldn't be a bad idea, I don't think. The right idea. Because I feel like even with the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, like, I don't think that's really usually the highlight of the night.
Right.
It's like the card, the actual Money in the Bank match. So why have a pay-per-view centered around that when it's not even really the highlight of the night? So, yeah, I mean, it's just something that Triple H can think about. Another thing on his plate that he can try to juggle and
come right. to sure the conclusion with. I'm sure they're thinking about that now, you know. Like, so AJ and Finn is going to happen also at Survivor Series.
Oh, that's going to be a great match, I think. And I love the return of the OC too, coming to back up AJ and take down Judgment Day.
Yeah. I mean, I think all three of them, they work really well together. And, you know, I think they both need each other. Like, Gallows and Anderson definitely need AJ. And AJ, I think, does his best work when he's with, like, the club. So, yeah, it's been a good addition having the Good Brothers back. And also, like, Judgment Day is starting to grow on me. I think they're getting like legitimate heat, especially Dominic. Like, oh my God. Like, I don't know if you saw Raw, but there was like a six-man tag, like Judgment Day versus Brawling Brutes. And when Dominic got into the ring, it was just the boos that were showered on him. Like, he is getting like genuine heat. And you can kind of see, like, he's improving every week, like, getting more confident and stuff. I still think he kind of needs to bulk up more, I think, to be taken seriously.
Like get his body more defined?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that.
I mean, like, long-term, because right now it's, like, and they're sort of playing off of it, where he's sort of, like, the cocky, like, punk kid who, like, can't really fight, but he's kind of a coward, and he like kind of hides behind the Judgment Day. Like, they're playing off of that, but I think like his look, I think he just needs to bulk up more. And I'm not really like a body critiquer, but he looks particularly like a kid that like he went to Ranger or something, like he was in school four, like
He just looks like a regular kid, like just in the cafeteria.
That is funny. So like, basically, like if you didn't like know who he was, he just looks like a natural person you can see walking on the street.
Right.
Like he's like he can blend right in with the average crowd in like Central Square. Or yeah, that's funny. He does look like he can just blend in like with the casual crowd.
Yeah, it's not to say that like every wrestler needs to be like super jacked or defined, but I think given the gimmick, which is supposed to be like a group of intimidating individuals, like Rhea has more of an impressive, well, she has more of an impressive build than anyone else on that in that group. But I think he needs to look a little bit more imposing.
Yeah. No, I see where you're going. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I never thought about it, but yeah, I can see that. I think that would be a great match on the card. And what other matches do we have on the card outside of that? I think that's it. We covered both matches, both War Games matches and the singles competitions. I think that's it. Yeah, we did them all.
Yeah, there's like only...
like five matches.
Only five. So I'm guessing like the War Games matches are going to be pretty lengthy, as they usually are.
Honestly, I've never watched a War Games match ever until I looked at, I didn't watch the whole match, but I looked at one earlier this week. I can say I'm honestly excited to see this go down on Saturday.
Was it the like NXT War Games?
Yes. So a funny thing, like how it works is that there are two rings and two members, a member from each team starts it off. And then after a certain time, they elect to pick one out of the cage and they come out and then enter the cage.
Mm-hmm.
The steel cage?
Yeah.
Now, do you just need one pinfall submission to win, or do you eliminate, like, you have to eliminate each member one by one?
So, I think what it is like, when all the members are in the ring,
yeah,
then that's when the match starts. And I don't know if it's elimination. It may be elimination. Probably is.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that the match doesn't really start until all members of each team are in the ring?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. Yep. Teams continue to alternate during 2-minute periods until all participants are in the ring. And once all participants enter the cage, which is referred to as the match beyond, both teams wrestle each other in the cage until any participant either submits, surrenders, or is knocked unconscious. So I don't think it's elimination.
Okay.
But it may have been altered.
For Survivor Series purposes, to keep up with the nostalgia that Survivor Series.
Exactly. But
okay.
Did you know that originally the original War Games cages had a... like a roof on top of it?
I think I may have known that before.
But they've gotten rid of it. Because I think Triple H said that. He was like, yeah, when I was growing up, I just thought it was so dumb that they would be like... that they would be like a roof on top of the cage. And then he also said that the way wrestling is now, where you have a lot of wrestlers who are high flyers...
Yeah. And,
you know,
you could take advantage of there being no roof
because exactly
like crazy exactly. moves off of it. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty exciting. Like, listen, I would love to go, but it's I don't know, the 300 section for me. It's like usually when I'm in the garden, I do that, but it's like you're there, but it is so far away.
Yeah,
so far away. So, I don't know. I was, like, checking StubHub yesterday to see if any of the tickets... So, prices have not gone down.
They have not gone down yet. That's why I'm trying to wait, like, towards Friday, maybe even on Saturday, to buy a ticket. So, I can see, like, all right, I'm definitely going to go and just make my decision at that point.
Right.
I definitely want to be in there, and I want to try to find out. I want to, like, see what's going to go on, like, what... festivities, quote unquote, are going on. What wrestlers are going to do meet and greets? I'm trying to take advantage. I want to get as much of a Survivor Series experience that I can get.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds cool.
So I assume that Jerry Lawler will be at Big Night Live on Saturday, meet and greet, I think from 10:30 to 12:30. Undertaker obviously got the I believe it's called the One Dead Man Show.
Right.
On Black Friday at 8 o'clock. That should be good, because you can tell a lot of stories that a lot of people don't know. And it's just reached his 32nd year anniversary with WWE.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a really great show. Just learning a lot about, like you said, like stories that are probably unknown to like a lot of wrestling fans.
Yeah. Exactly. So I feel like, man, I may have to take advantage of that and just go to that too. But I'm going to see what the prices are looking like tomorrow. Or I'll probably check after we're done with this pod.
I think the last time I checked, like, the prices for the Dead Man Show are, like, comparable to prices for Survivor Series.
When I first seen the prices, it was crazy. When I, like, looked back again on Ticketmaster, it was only $100. I'm like, oh, really? I'm not bad. Now that I can do. When I first saw it, it was crazy. Like, yeah, definitely not going to pay that much to go to Big Night Live. Somewhere I'm at frequently for parties, I'm not paying them as money to go there.
Yeah, I feel you.
$100 is that's not bad. It is The Undertaker, one of the most iconic wrestling figures in wrestling in history. So $100 isn't bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think those kind of shows are really cool. Like, a couple of years ago, my friend and I went to go see Mick Foley speak. And it was like a mix of him doing stand-up, but then also just telling stories.
Really, it was funny. That was on the network. I don't know if it was that specific show that you went to, but they did. They had that on the network. I remember that. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, he really is. He really is.
Which actually makes sense now, thinking about like all his gimmicks that he's had throughout his career. So it actually makes sense that he actually has that humor in him. Like, from Dude Love to funny moments being Mankind.
Hilarious moments, yeah.
Especially with like the, you know, the shirt and tie era of Mr. Sacco.
Right.
Classics.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Seems like a good hearted person who just like wants like the best for everybody working right. His planet. Doesn't matter what your race is or what sex you identify as or your religion. I think he seems like somebody who just wants like the best for everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
We're gonna finish up here. So hey, let me know what you're thinking about. I'll send you the information that I last saw for the tickets. And hey, if you're not there, and I'm there, I'll let you know how it is. I'll send you
a I'm gonna try my hardest. Just like you said, I think just up until the beginning of the show, I'm just gonna try to find tickets. Cause you know, people for whatever reason they can't go, maybe they got sell tickets. I'm gonna still try.
Word. Exactly, yeah. So I'm gonna I talked to my boy today, he's gonna buy it tomorrow. I'm like, god damn. How about just wait until like Friday, Saturday? Then we can do that.
Yeah, not for you.
Yeah. But all right, man. So yeah, I'll definitely keep in touch with you. This will be up tomorrow morning.
All right, word. Thank you so much.
No problem, man. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye.
And that is a wrap for this episode. Salute to the homie Alan. Thank you to Anchor. And of course, thank you guys for listening, for your continued support. And if you're new to this pod, I appreciate you just as much. And hey, feel free to hit that subscribe button, as this podcast is available just about everywhere you listen to your favorite podcast at, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can also keep up with me as well on social media, Instagram and Twitter at MrVincent13. You can also like my Facebook fan page as well, Emmanuel Vincent. That's it for now. Hopefully I will get back on track with the NFL and put a pod out next week, previewing next week's slate of games. So fingers crossed, I don't see why I won't be able to get it done, but you know, just hope for the best. And I actually got to get off this right now and buy my ticket for Survivor Series War Games tonight. No way I can't be in the building for this monumental event. So I will be doing that. You guys, whatever you do for the rest of the weekend, stay safe, have fun. Until next time, take care.